Добрый день.
Hello, is that Artem?
Yes, speaking.
We have some very good news for you, Artem. You are our lucky prize winner to come and spend a week with myself over in Perth in Western Australia.
Holy smokes! Well, man, you made my day totally. It's unbelievable. The perfect honest, you know, the only time I ever won a lottery was like 20 years ago when I won a scholarship to go to the States to do my MBA. Yeah. Other than that, in the last 7 lotteries that I participated, there were lotteries for all these major marathons, you know, like London, New York, you know, Berlin, whatever. I never won, and I just chatted with this friend of mine. I was like, you know what, I'm going to quit. I'm not going to apply for this lottery anymore because it's just like my like a day for them. And now you're calling me all the way from Australia. You guys, I'm excited. Thank you so much.
That was the voice of Artem in Russia, our lucky prize winner. And this is episode 6 of the Swim Smooth podcast. Well, hello, listeners. My name is Paul Newson. I'm joined today by Adam Young over there in the UK. Adam, how are you, sir?
Good morning. Very good. Very excited. We are going to call the lucky winner of the Swim Smooth prize draw. This is it. This is the big one. This is the big trip to Perth. Have you won it? Will your phone ring? Whoa, we're going to find out any second now. I tell you what, Paul, I'm actually shaking here. I'm slightly excited. I'm very excited about this. How are you feeling?
It's going to be a trip of a lifetime for whoever gets the caller, the lucky caller today. And we're going to be chatting with them, having a little bit of a chat about their swimming, etc. And yeah, like you say, Adam, I'm super excited. I am a little bit nervous as well. Of course, phoning a phone number at random, you're never sure if you're going to get the person who you want to be speaking to. But let's see how we go with that.
The lucky winner out of the hat is actually in Russia. So that narrows it down. If you're in Russia right now listening to this,
Yeah, fingers on the button, please.
It's Saturday morning, the 1st of December. We're going to do this every year between now and eternity to win this big trip to Perth. We're going to talk a little bit about what we do in Perth and what that lucky winner is going to be looking forward to in a second. But we're going to do this every year. All you have to do, if you missed it this year, all you have to do is be subscribed to the Swim Smooth blog and you're automatically going for this draw every year. Totally free. You just go to feelforthewater.com and sign up for the blog. If you get our emails every Friday, our tips and hints emails every Friday, then you're automatically entered and you will be, your name goes into the big, big hat to get pulled out. So, Paul, you're based over in Perth.
Yeah, so let me detail a little bit more about what was involved with coming over for this exciting trip. You'll be flying over, or we'll be flying you over from wherever you are in the world. And as Adam just mentioned there, the lucky prize winner will be coming from Russia all the way over to Perth in Western Australia. So down under, mate, we'll be coming over there. That was my best impression of an Aussie accent, Adam. What do you reckon?
3 out of 10. not that I'm an Aussie or anything, I don't know, but yeah. Keep working on it. You've only been there 10 years.
It's a little bit more than that, actually. Coming up to 17 now, believe it or not. But yeah, I still can't master the Aussie accent. But anyway, so the lucky prize winner is going to be flown from Russia all the way to Perth in Western Australia and be spending a whole week with myself and the Swim Smooth squad at our beautiful Claremont swimming pool, a beautiful geothermally heated 28.5 degrees year-round swimming pool. But hopefully we're going to be getting the lucky prize winner across during our summer period, so there won't be any dramas about it, whether it be too cold or what have you. The beautiful Claremont swimming pool is, like I say, it's year-round heated to 28.5 degrees. But it's always nice to come and experience Perth, isn't it, Adam, in the summer months, wouldn't you say?
I tell you what, it's a beautiful place to visit. And obviously, Russia's a massive country, but this person, it could well be sub-zero where they're coming from. I don't actually know where they are in Russia. We just looked up where they were. It's sensational destination, beautiful beaches, perfect weather that time of year, hot, sunny, everyone's tanned, fit, good looking, bronzed. Oh, what a place to visit.
So Adam, you've spent obviously a long time over here in Perth. Tell us some of your favorite things to do in and around the Perth area.
Wow. Well, you've obviously got the whole sort of western suburb regions with Cottesloe Beach being a real sort of highlight. That's where we run a lot of our open water skill sessions down on the beach there. Beautiful beach, beautiful location. Across to Rottnest Islands, a short ferry run across takes about, is it half an hour on the ferry, if I remember rightly? Sensational nature reserve off the coast there with the famous quokkas. I think there was a social media epidemic, wasn't there, about all sorts of celebs going across to see the native marsupials over on Rottnest Island.
That's right. Roger Federer posing with a quokka. A quokka, if you don't know what one of these things are, they're native and only found on this particular island, which is 20 kilometres off the coast of Perth in Western Australia. I'd describe it sort of like a mini kangaroo, if you like. It's very cute, very furry. They're very friendly with humans. They'll come up to you and you're not really supposed to touch them and that sort of stuff, but they do roam around in massive quantities. And believe it or not, the reason why Rottnest Island is called Rottnest, it was actually settled by the Dutch originally, and they believed it was these things were giant rats, believe it or not. So they called it Rat's Nest, which over time became Rottnest. So that's a little bit of a brief history story for you there, Adam, about where it got its name. But yeah, like you say, it's one of my favorite places to go and visit, and hopefully lucky prize winner will find a day in his schedule outside of all the hard training we're going to be doing. So let me talk a little bit about the hard training and some of the exciting things that lucky prize winner will actually get to experience. We're going to be doing some one-to-one video analysis and stroke correction sessions. And believe it or not, I'm in my 21st year now of doing these video analysis sessions. So it would be a pleasure to take the swimmer through, show them what they're doing, show them what they need to be doing to actually try to improve their swimming, and then be able to maximize and benefit on their time spent with the squad, knowing a couple of areas that they'd benefit from improving on within their stroke, and then be taken through their paces with the squad. And they'll get to experience all of our pool swimming sessions. So that'll be a pure technique session on the Monday, a technique endurance session on the Tuesday, a red mist, the famous red mist endurance session on the Wednesday. We'll probably pop down for a open water swim down to the beautiful Claremont Jetty on the Thursday. And then we'll round out with a CSS development session on the Friday. And depending on how the flights, et cetera, work out, we've also got our new Saturday Stoic session as well on the Saturday morning, where the swimmer will get a chance to put it all together. They'll be staying very close to the Claremont swimming pool, so transportation and getting around should be very, very easy. And like Adam says, this is what we call the Golden Triangle over here in Perth area. So yeah, very excited. So Adam, shall we, without further ado, shall we give this a little bit of a try then?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
Woo. Okay. Are you nervous?
I am. My heart rate's gone up 10 beats, I think. I'm excited. Yeah. What's going to happen?
All right. Well, let's hope we get our swimmer. Let's hope. Okay. Fingers crossed. Here we go, everybody. Hello, is that Artem?
Yes, speaking.
Artem, this is Paul Newsome and Adam Young here calling up from Swim Smooth. How are you today?
I'm awesome, Paul.
Awesome.
Wow, I'm very surprised. How are you doing there?
I'm very good, actually. We're sweltering in some very, very hot heat here at the moment. It's 40 degrees Celsius here in Perth.
You know, I'm looking outside and it's actually -3 and snow and shit. I was like thinking to go to the swimming pool this morning, maybe to practice some of your drills. But then I was so lazy and I didn't sleep well.
Hopefully this is going to give you inspiration then, Artem, to get down to the pool and practice those drills, etc. Excellent. We have some very good news for you, Artem. You are our lucky prize winner to come and spend a week with myself over in Perth in Western Australia.
Holy smokes. Yes, I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. Thank you so much. I'm excited. It is unbelievable.
We're going to have you over here in Perth to do some one-to-one video analysis training with myself and spending some time a week with the Swim Smooth squad over here in Perth. We're very excited to get you across here, Artem.
I can't believe that, guys. You know what? I've been thinking lately, you know, that I'm not progressing with my swimming at all. I just bumped into another swimming coach just 2 days on Friday at the swimming pool where I go here in Moscow. And it's just like, hey, can you please take a look at me? I'm just struggling. I'm trying to. I need somebody to look from the side, you know, and you know, just give us some tips, because it's just, to be honest, it's a little bit frustrating. I'm a distance runner, and I was sort of thinking to sort of transition into a triathlon, or at least maybe into swim run. And I needed my first swim run last summer, well, this past summer. And, you know, a friend of mine who was in that park at the time, he actually, you know, videoed me, you know, took some video of me of swimming and running there. And when I looked at it, I was like, oh, man, that looks pathetic. I was just, at least I could catch up with the guys, you know, with the guys who are running. But on the swim leg, that was just like, oh, gosh. Well, man, you made my day totally. It's unbelievable. The perfect honest, you know, the only time I ever won a lottery was like 20 years ago when I won a scholarship to go to the States to do my MBA. Other than that, in the last 7 lotteries that I participated, and there were lotteries for all these major marathons, you know, like London, New York, you know, Berlin, whatever, I never won. And I just chatted with this friend of mine. I was like, you know what, I'm going to quit. I'm not going to apply for this lottery anymore, because it's just like my way. A day for them. And now you're calling me all the way from Australia. You guys, I'm excited. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So we'll send some further details through to you via email, Artem. I believe I've got your email address all correct. And we'll get some dates sorted out. We're looking at, and obviously subject to your availability, etc., we have our 2-week coaches education course in February over here in Perth. So that'll be an ideal time to come. But obviously it depends a little bit on your schedule. So we can sort that out. I'll flick you over an email later on today. But yes, congratulations. We can't wait to get you over here and hopefully be able to sort out some of that frustration you have with your swimming and get you right on the right track. And funnily enough, I'm actually heading over to Bali tomorrow. I'm doing a swim run myself over in Bali in Indonesia.
Oh, you
tomorrow.
Do? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So got that on the plan. So that's all good.
I follow your blog. You did Ottawa this past summer, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
That's quite a feat. That's a big one here in Europe. Well, I mean, it's a big one globally, of course.
It was a big day out, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, okay. So, wow, that's amazing, guys. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You know, it was probably some. It was kind of funny because, you know, just last night, and I was about just to hit the hay. I had to look up something, a place somewhere on the map. I didn't know what, and it was one of the suburbs of Perth, of all things.
Oh, wow. Okay. There you go. So it must be something in the air, perhaps.
Yeah, probably.
If you believe in fate,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, there we go.
I'm just speechlessly excited.
And is it around about midday over there in Russia at the moment?
It's 1:30 in the afternoon.
Okay,
it's,
perfect.
It's a great day. You know, it's one of the shorter days of the year. You know, in 3 weeks it's going to be like very short. So the sunrise is about 8:30 here, and sets around 4-ish, something like that. And as of last week, we have snow on the ground here. So
wow. You know, so it's about -3 degrees.
What'd you say?
About -3 degrees, you say?
Yeah, about minus three now, yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, for me, one of those days when you just need to, you know, put your stuff together and just wait until it gets warm again.
Yeah.
My blood is a little bit too thin for this kind of weather.
Totally. Well, hopefully we get you a bit inspired there today and get you down to the swimming pool and get you ticking along. And we'll see you over here in Perth in a couple of months' time.
Well, I'm awesome. You know, I'll just need to break the news to the family now. When the kids get back to school from school with my wife. You know. Well, hey, excellent. Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it. And keep on doing the great work. You know, you've been you've been a big inspiration for me on the swim front at least. Because you know, when I first discovered your blog and your school and everything, I kind of semi jokingly asked what it would take you to bring you to Moscow.
Well, there we go. We don't have to go to Moscow. You can come all the way over to Perth, in Western Australia, Artem. That's awesome.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. You have a great day there.
You too. Thank you very much. Speak to you soon. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. Cheers. Bye bye.
Well, Adam, there we go. Artem in Russia. What do you reckon to that? He was blown away by being the lucky prize winner to come all the way over to here in Perth. Now, I don't think you heard all of that conversation yourself, Adam, but
I got cut off. Let me tell you, in the middle of it. Go on. What was he excited?
Let me tell you, he was very excited. He said it's minus 3 degrees. It's a cold, wet, miserable day there in Moscow at the moment. And he said, you know, he skipped his swimming session this morning. He was just lacking a little bit of motivation. He's feeling a bit frustrated with his swimming. He wants to improve. He was just about to actually engage a coach there in Moscow to do some video analysis work with him. And I said, hey, well, you know what? You got it coming to you over here in Perth in Western Australia. So what a way for him to, he's actually 1:30 p.m. over there in over there in Moscow at the moment. We're at 6:30 p.m. so they're obviously 5 hours behind us here, but yeah, he was on cloud nine, let's say. So looking forward to getting Artem all the way over here to Perth.
Alrighty, so let's move on to today's call, Paul. Who are we speaking to?
Well, today we've got a very exciting chat with Andy Blow. Andy Blow was my best mate at university. We went all the way back doing sports and exercise science at Bath University. And believe it or not, Adam, we actually started in 1997, which my calculations proved correct was 21 years ago, believe it or not. So we're down there at Bath University, myself and Andy. And Andy is now the founder of Precision Hydration, who SwimSmooth is due to be partnering up with. We've got some exciting deals and things to talk about at the end of the episode here. But we're going to have a chat with Andy about his background in sports and exercise science, through his various coaching platforms that he's operated in, and now to this day with Precision Hydration. He's doing some pretty crazy stuff out of him. He seems to be always over in the US working with some pretty big sporting teams in both NFL, baseball, and obviously in triathlon and the endurance space as well. They do a pretty cool thing. And I think what's going to come across in the interview today is just how similar Andy's Precision Hydration is towards our swim types model, in the sense that we're talking about individualization and the need to have specific products or specific ways of actually approaching your preparation for endurance sport. So I'm pretty excited about it. Now, Adam, obviously met Andy a few times yourself. Got any ideas about what things you're excited about within the show here?
Yeah, I'm personally looking to increase my knowledge on the hydration side of things. So very excited about that, to tap into his expertise here. He's also a very good athlete in his own right. So I'm hoping he's going to talk a little bit about that and his achievements too. I know the two of you went head to head on many occasions over the years. So wow, we might get entertained with a few war stories. This is a bit like when you take you go around to your girlfriend's house and your mum brings out the old photos. I'm hoping for a bit of dirt on each of you from from those background stories. And I do my very best to whip that up for you listeners as best that I can. I keep wanting to call you viewers, which is a bit daft. All right, let's meet Andy, shall we?
So, Andy, welcome to the Swim Smooth podcast. It's awesome to have you on the show, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. I have got a little bit of jet lag going on, but talking to a man who gets up at 4 a.m. every day, I can't complain about that.
It sounds like you've been doing some crazy traveling recently. Obviously, we'll dig into that with the precision hydration stuff in a moment, but just tell us where you've been just recently and what you've been up to.
I've just been on the west coast of the US in Los Angeles, and then over in Las Vegas actually for something called the Major League Baseball Winter Meetings, which is where all of the sort of medical and support staff and training staff for the US Major League Baseball teams get together for professional development courses and expos and that sort of thing. Because over the last few years, we've been doing a fair amount of work with baseball teams. So it was actually a really interesting week chatting with the medical people out there and, you know, figuring out what we can do with them next season.
Yeah, sounds pretty cool. Now, obviously, I can't imagine we've got too many baseball players listening into the show. Most of our listeners are going to be in the swimming and triathlon space. So just tell us very briefly, we'll dig into it in more detail shortly, but why are you working with baseball teams? What exactly is it that you're doing for them? And just to sort of lead us into our chat within the podcast here.
Yeah, sure. It's really all about hydration. Obviously, our company, Precision Hydration, we do sweat testing and do individualized hydration products for different athletes. And I actually never thought that baseball would be a sport that we'd end up working in quite so much, because I didn't know much about the sport as a Brit until I went over to the US. But having been to some of the places where these guys play, especially in the south of America, you know, in Florida and in Louisiana and all of Texas and Arizona, where it gets super, super hot, they play an amazing amount of games. The games are very, very long, and they play a lot of back-to-back games. So they actually have quite an issue staying on top of their hydration, some of the guys, especially the catchers who sit behind, you know, catching all the pitches. They've got loads of gear on. So it's quite an intense sport, and we're trying to help them figure out, you know, how they can individualize and optimize their hydration to keep the guys performing day in, day out through a long season.
Absolutely. Now, besides obviously our long-standing friendship, that's one of the reasons wanting to get you on the show, really, is at the heart and soul of our methodology is a thing we call swim types, being able to identify the starting point for somebody's swimming progression and how they want to improve. And obviously, we're all built differently. We all swim a little bit differently. We need a swim training program that's different for our individual characteristics. And the same thing is true is of course, with Precision Hydration. You're creating hydration products which are suitable for a variety of different sweaters. And I know, going back to our own history, Andy, I remember doing wind training sessions in my dormitory room at university, and we were both sweating like demons there. I always thought I was a heavy, heavy sweater, and I just assumed I was going to be losing loads and loads of electrolyte. But from having done one of these precision hydration tests, it turns out that I lose a lot of fluid, but not quite as much sodium as yourself and obviously other electrolytes. Tell us a little bit about your own sweating, which sort of led you into setting up Precision Hydration, if that's not too much of a personal question.
Yeah, no, I remember those sessions really well, mate. And definitely, I do think you sweated more than I did, even though I sweat a lot. You were the one who used to have the big puddle of water underneath the turbo a lot of the time. And so, yeah, a lot of people assume that sweating, the differences in sweating between people is just how much you sweat, because that's very obvious. You know, we all know, you've all been down the gym and seen some people who sweat or don't appear to sweat at all, and others that is pouring off them as soon as they start. I found out sort of after, it was towards the end of my time training with you at Bath, and when I started to step up and do some longer and hotter races, that I actually found I would really struggle in the heat. I did Kona in 2000, I think it was either 2003 or 2004, and had an absolute shocker there with the heat and humidity. And I know that's not completely uncommon for people, especially coming from Europe, but for me, I was in a really bad way. I was actually quite ill after the race for a few days, and it was all down to basically a condition called hypernatremia, which is where you sweat out a lot of salt and don't replace enough of it, so you dilute the salt levels in your blood. I didn't really know that at the time, especially, but it was sort of around then and after then that a friend of mine who's a doctor suggested I got a sweat test done, and he measured the amount of salt that I was losing in my sweat, and it was really, really high. And he told me, you know, this is largely a genetic thing. There's not much you can do about it. But if you were to go back and race in the heat again, you should be taking a lot more salt. And sure enough, I did that the next time I was competing somewhere hot, and it was like night and day for me. It made such a big difference. But like you say, when we talk with you, although you've got a high sweat rate, and that means you can lose a fair amount of salt over a long period of time, your sweat's a lot more dilute. So, you know, the type of hydration plan that would work for you probably wouldn't work for me perfectly, and vice versa.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's definitely the heart and soul of our swim type system. Yeah, the training session that might work for Jane is going to be completely different. That might work for John based on their different swimming types, etc., and what's holding them back in the water. So yeah, it's really quite interesting is all that. So just before we step into all of that, let's have a little bit of a background, a bit of a chit chat about, you know, how you got into sport first and foremost, how you ended up, or how we both ended up at Bath University doing sports and exercise science, and then some of the things, the stepping stones that have led you to developing this product, which is helping athletes all around the world, and not just in the endurance space, but in a whole range of different sports as well. So I think it's probably best we maybe just chat briefly here about some of our experiences, our shared experiences just very recently. Of course, I've been banging on. This is now our sixth episode of the Swim Smooth podcast, and people are probably getting sick of me talking about the Eure de l'Eure, because I've pretty much mentioned it in every single show. It's etched into my memory for the rest of my life, I think, just in terms of how much I suffered via behind you dragging me around that particular course there. But for those of you who have missed any of the episodes, myself and Andy teamed up together to do this crazy sport of swim run. It's 75 kilometers on the Stockholm archipelago, basically 65 k's of trail running, 10 k's of open ocean or open water swimming. And you do it you complete the distance together, tethered usually to your partner, working together as a bit of a team. And the initial plan was for me to lead the swims and for Andy to lead the runs. We knew Andy was going to be a bit stronger there. But as it turns out, Andy, you pretty much led, apart from the first swim, you pretty much led everything, dragged me all the way around the course. I was absolutely just totally knackered at the end of the race. How do you recall the particular event, and how have you pulled up afterwards?
I think I've blanked a lot of it out of my mind, actually. No, it was a tough day, mate. And I think, you know, like I said to you afterwards, I think you do yourself a bit of a disservice, you know, making it sound like I dragged you around the whole day, because I think the difference between us was very small. I was certainly very beaten up by that race, and it's very running heavy, isn't it? So, you know, I thought we teamed, you know, we did really well. I thought where we were both struggling actually was on the really, really technical running, where the local athletes were sort of diving in and out between the trees and over the rocks and up and down all of those little off the really sort of gnarly off-road bits. Because actually on the flatter running, on the straighter running, we were kind of, you know, most of the time holding our own. I think both of us probably felt that it was a lack of mileage in the legs for the overall running that was what held us back. Because I don't know about you, but once I got off that plane getting home 2 days later, I was still having to walk downstairs backwards. So I was in a right old mess.
Yeah. Absolutely. My legs are feeling similarly shot at the moment. I just raced in Bali, the Bali Hope swim run at the weekend. And I got a chance to actually race with Annika Eriksson, who we actually were sort of toeing the line toe-to-toe the entire day over in Sweden. Yeah. And racing against Annika again this weekend. And she was one of those such athletes who just seems to just dance over the rocks and just makes it look so easy. So yeah, you're definitely right. It's quite hard to simulate that though. And we're quite lucky. We're going to actually have Annika on the show next week, I believe, chatting a little bit about the history of swim run. So we won't go into it too much more than that just now. But if you're interested in knowing a little bit more about this crazy sport, we'll get into it with the four-time world champion, the female world champion, Annika Eriksson, in one of the future shows. But yeah, it was a great experience to share that with you, Andy. And like I say, it goes down in the record books as probably one of the hardest things, or definitely the hardest thing I've ever done physically. So yeah, really, really good. So
I can't remember who said it to us, but someone said it's good to go that deep, you know, sometimes, isn't it? And sort of really, really scrape the bottom of the barrel, because it's good for your mind and your soul, I think, to push that hard. The other thing that was good about it for me was actually getting it was the motivation to get stuck into the swim training again after a lot of years, because I was obviously watching the sessions that you were doing and that you were sort of putting out there, and very conscious of the fact that my swimming was not going to be up to your scratch. So it really sort of turbocharged my motivation to get some training. And I really sort of enjoyed doing your red mist sessions and using the, you know, doing the CSS tests and doing it all a bit more properly than I have for the last few years. So that was a big benefit for me last year. And it's one that I'm actually going to aim. I have, to be honest with you, had a few weeks off doing those since the race, but my goal is this December and January to start picking it up again, start doing one of those red mist sessions every week to get my fitness back.
Yeah, they definitely teach you where you're at with your fitness, and definitely keep you on the straight and narrow, that's for sure. I think we had Dan Plews on the show for our very first episode, and obviously you know Dan pretty well. I go back about 25 years with Dan, and you know, he was just sort of mentioning to me he's hoping I'm going to do one of the Brekka swim runs with him over in New Zealand. But you know, he ran 2:50 off the bike at Kona, set the world record for the Ironman as an age grouper. So I know you mean that motivation.
Very good.
It's going to be motivating me to work hard on the run there. So, you know, one of the other things that Dan actually mentioned as well, and this is maybe just leads into to your own background. He said his words specifically were, the days are long and the years are short. And, you know, we go back, myself and yourself, go back 20, 21 years now since we first met at university. I think we've both been working very, very hard in our own respective areas, et cetera. But, you know, the years seem to have just sort of flown by. And one of the cool things about going to university there, we both did sports and exercise science. And I think there's about 20 or 21 people on that particular course. And it's just sort of amazing how so many people, not just from that particular course, but who were actually around us at that point in time doing triathlon, are still in the sport, still excelling, whether it be through their own physical achievements, et cetera, or maybe in the space which we're both in at the moment of actually producing products or programs or those sort of things to help other people improve. I think it's quite a nice thing. You know, obviously last year with Tim Don, who we both know and we've been racing with over the years, you know, he's still at 25 years later on, he's still racing at the highest level of the sport, setting world records in the Ironman distance, and of course Daniel Plews as well. So it's all quite nice to sort of see that, you know, we're all, it might be years down the line, but we're all still involved in those, in that space, and pretty exciting. So, you know, prior to arriving then at Bath University, Andy, tell us a little bit about your background. What sports were you up to before you got to Bath University in 1997?
Well, before I came to Bath, I actually probably spent most of my time playing football or soccer. And I was all right at that. I wasn't particularly brilliant, but I loved it. You know, I was definitely, when I was a young lad, I wanted to be a professional footballer, like probably 95% of lads in England do when you grow up. But eventually I used to do some cross-country running and a bit of swimming, and kind of, I think when I was about 15 or 16, started to fade out of football when I started to realize I wasn't actually going to make it as a professional footballer. And for whatever reason, got into doing a little biathlon swim run race, and saw there was a triathlon on the same day, and I saw that and I saw the bikes, and I asked my dad if he'd, you know, get me a road bike, and he managed to get one. And I still remember, I think he paid, it was either 10 or 20 quid for it from my cousin. And it was stuck in the big chain ring, but it was a decent sort of Reynolds steel frame road bike. And I went out and did some training on that and did a triathlon and just got really hooked into it. And then coming into uni, I'd done a few, I was always a reasonable runner, but my swimming and biking was, you know, pretty mediocre. And then of course I turned up at Bath Uni to do sport and exercise science and also to train for triathlon, and ended up, you know, jumping in and training with you. And I remember at first being left a long, long way behind, especially in the pool. but you were being trained by Chris Jones at the time. And
that's right.
His programs were on a little A4 piece of paper. And basically, I started doing the same training program that you were doing. And I think it brought and I had to work really hard, as you probably remember, with the swimming to get my times down. But after a few months, we were pretty nip and tuck, weren't we? Training really hard.
Yeah, definitely,
trying to get to, we were training for the British Universities Championships, weren't we? And then trying to train to get vest.
Totally, totally. I remember that vividly, actually, those sessions from Chris Jones. So listeners, for those of you who hadn't heard of Chris, Chris was the British triathlon head performance coach during that time, or would shortly be, at least leading up to the Sydney Olympic Games. I think he was the official women's coach at that point. But Chris is a fantastic inspiration for both me and Andy. And he used to send these, as Andy says, he used to send these A4 sheets over to us, which were perfectly ruled and all handwritten with our training programs on there. Imagine that in this day and age, with Training Peaks and everything being digital and online, this was a proper handwritten training program right back in the day. And we're talking 21 years ago, but it was great getting those through the post, as it were, from, does anyone use the post these days? I'm not sure, but does anyone write in these days? But yeah, that's what we had at that particular point in time. So yeah, that was pretty cool. And of course, Richard Hobson came in place at Bath University. I think it was in our second year, wasn't it? And he became our sort of more local coach, helping us out there at Bath University. I think you're also doing yourself a little bit of a disjustice on the swim side of things, because I vividly remember going to the British University Swimming Championships in Swansea, of all places. And we were both lined up for the same heat of the men's 1500 meter freestyle in a 25 meter swimming pool. I don't know if you remember, but we set off, and as I usually do, even to this day, I still got to tame it in and not go off too quick. I went off too quick. Started dying, started flagging. You started pulling me back, and I think, as memory serves correct, I actually stopped 50 meters short of 1500 meters. Can you remember that?
I do remember that. Yeah, yeah,
that's right. You came through and actually pipped me to the line then on that one. So yeah, I mean, your swimming definitely improved significantly. You were down to sort of swimming around about 18 minutes for 1500 meters. So for somebody who hasn't got as much of a swimming background, you know, it's amazing to sort of get down to that type of level there. So when you're at university, Andy, what would you have said was your biggest interest at, you know, doing sports and exercise science? So obviously we've got different disciplines. We've got physiology, we've got psychology, we've got biomechanics. Where was your interest at that point in time, would you say?
I think it was probably physiology, just because I felt that was most applicable to what we were trying to do as athletes. You know, I felt that that was where you could learn the most for your own performance. I honestly probably struggled to engage a little bit with things like biomechanics. We actually had a pretty interesting and sort of inspiring guy teaching that, didn't we? Aki Salo, our Finnish biomechanist. But I just struggled a bit with maths and didn't really apply myself too hard to that because I was too interested in training the rest of the time. But I think, yes, probably physiology. And then what cemented that was I ended up getting an opportunity to work with someone who you still know very well, which is Kirsty Moore, who was the physiologist at the university at the time. And I did a placement in the lab at the university doing all the physiological testing for the different groups of elite athletes that were there. And after that, I was pretty set that physiology was what I was going to be interested in.
Yeah, definitely. I think, interestingly enough, I was actually a little bit more down the biomechanics line. I wouldn't say I was the best biomechanist out there by a long stretch, but I had an interest in the coaching side of things and the biomechanics related to that. And, you know, that's where our paths slightly differed, in the sense that I went a little bit more down the coaching route and video analysis and stroke correction, that type of thing. And obviously using the physiology background to really improve what you're doing there with precision hydration to this day. So it was a 4-year course, sports and exercise science, there at Bath University. Myself and Andy were the very first year to do that at Bath University. And in our third year, we had a placement year. And in the last show, Andy, I was talking about how I was working for British Triathlon as a talent ID officer. That's where I met and picked up Harry Wiltshire and started coaching him in the very early part of his career. But you did something entirely different. Tell us a little bit about what you did in that third year.
I first of all did a few months with Kirsty in the physiology lab at Bath. You know, sort of understanding. I think I worked from sort of the summer through till Christmas doing that. And then I was lucky enough to pick up a placement with the Formula One racing team, which was the Benetton team back then, who are now the Renault Formula One team. And I was helping to run their sports science lab and putting on their training camps for drivers and doing some traveling with them. So that started in January of that year and went right through until September when I went back to uni. And it was honestly one of the most fantastic things, you know, I ever did. Worked with a really interesting bunch of people. Human performance manager there is a guy called Bernie Shrewsbury, who's still working in Formula One to this day, amongst other things. And he was an ex-Special Forces Royal Marine and SBS Special Forces guy, very good triathlete in his day as well. There was a guy called Mike Chapman, who was a physio and a doctor as well. So I had a really interesting bunch of people to work with and had a great time doing that, you know, learning a lot on my feet doing all that.
Absolutely. Now, Adam, you're obviously a big Formula One fan as well. And I dare say that would have been a dream job for you, wouldn't it? Actually being based there down in Silverstone, around that sort of area.
Yeah, I would have loved a bit of that. Who would have been driving for Benetton at that time? Was it before the Schumacher era, or was it about
the It was literally immediately after the Schumacher era. So I was the drivers that I worked with were Giancarlo Fisichella, Italian guy, and Alex Wurz, who's an Austrian guy. I remember Alex Wurz in particular was a really keen cyclist and big into his mountain biking and stuff. So he and I, you know, hit it off pretty well. Fisichella preferred, I think, going out drinking and staying in nightclubs. So it was a little bit more
typical Italian.
He was a sports scientist. He was a really lovely guy, but not so interested in what I had to help him with.
No. So after a few nights out, he actually needed your help with hydration more than anyone.
Hydration side, yeah. I do remember one of the funniest things that happened in my job there was my first day at work. And my first day at work was to fly to Lanzarote. We were taking the guys on a training camp in January. And I'd never, you know, I was a young lad. I must have been, what were we then, about 20, 19 or 20.
Yeah, something like that.
Not done a lot of driving, to be honest with you, and certainly not on the. I had a driving license, but I hadn't driven on the wrong side of the road before. Never driven anything bigger than probably my my little Ford Fiesta at the time. And got to the resort. Bernie threw me a set of keys for a big, massive minibus, and said, "Right, bloke, you need to drive back to the airport and go and pick up Alex Wurz because he's just come in on his flight." So there's me, like, wrong side of the road, massive minibus. And if you've been to Lanzarote, you know what those roads are like, with the big sort of tarmac that just stops and drops off into lava at the edge. So I think I drove to the airport at about an average speed of 25 miles an hour, trying to figure out what I was doing. Picked this Formula One racing driver up and had to drive him back to Club La Santa. And, of course, I couldn't drive at 25 miles an hour with an F1 guy in the car, so I had to try and man up and act like I know what he's doing. And I must have bounced over about three roundabouts and nearly dropped a wheel off the curb. And at one point, Alex just said to me, "said Look, do you want me to drive?"
Oh, I bet he did.
No, it's all good. I can get you there. I think he was a bit nervous, probably more nervous than the race. But no, he was. Awesome. He got on pretty well, though. He's a good guy.
Yeah, totally. It's interesting, isn't it, to how people like Jenson Button then have gone on to actually getting quite involved in triathlon, you know, using triathlon at least initially to keep fit for Formula One, but then, you know, post-career, et cetera, getting more into doing it because they absolutely love the sport. Did you see some of those guys getting into it at that point when you were there at Benetton, or?
Yeah, very much so. And I think Bernie Shrewsbury was a guy who was quite responsible for that, because Jenson Button was a driver that we worked with a couple of years after Fisichella and Wurz, because I actually went back and worked full time for Bernie for a few years after I left university at the Formula One team, and he was big on doing, you know, triathlon type training with all these guys. So I think and that suited me down to the ground, obviously, because part of my job was going out to Monaco and Nice and riding in the mountains with them on road bikes, taking them sea swimming, taking them for runs. It was like a dream job, and I definitely think that, you know, for Jenson, certainly that is what sowed the seed and gave him the basic skills. I remember having to teach him how to clip into, you know, how to clip his shoes into a road bike and that kind of thing.
Wow.
He's gone on and done exceptionally well, hasn't he, at triathlon since then?
Oh, amazing.
He did quite well as a driver as well.
Yeah, his driving wasn't too bad, was it?
That's exactly right. Now, obviously, when you're working with the Formula One guys, I'm assuming, Andy, that hydration is very, very important for those guys. Were you involved on that level, or were you just purely testing in the physiology lab? Were you not so much involved in the nutrition hydration side of things, or what can you tell us about that?
It was a bit of everything, really. The guys don't get a chance to drink much in the car. Some of them have a drink system in the car, which contains about, you know, between sort of 400 and 700 milliliters, or it certainly did back then, which was powered by a little pump so they could pump water into their mouths. It didn't always work. We tried different drinks for them. Sometimes we would use just have water in there. Sometimes we would use something with a bit of energy in it or with some electrolytes in it, like a product called Isostar, if you remember that. It was an old, I think it's still around, it's like a Swiss sports drink, I think. Some of them would like a bit of that. I definitely learned a few hydration lessons. One was working with Mark Webber, and Mark was very, you know, diligent and serious. I think probably the fittest and most committed racing driver that I've worked with. And actually, I think that with Mark, we made a pretty critical mistake once. I wasn't working with him closely at the time, but I'm sure that the influence was there, because he actually, at the Monaco Grand Prix, he was driving in Formula 3000 at the time, not in F1. He actually drank too much in the build up because it was going to be a hot race, drank too much water, and gave himself a mild case of hypernatremia, and it made him feel very unwell. He had a really bad performance, and that was a big learning curve for both him and I, in the fact that, you know, back in the 90s when we were studying sports science, the message was all about, you know, you've just got to drink, and dehydration is going to get you if you don't. It was actually quite, the messaging was skewed towards kind of be aware of dehydration, drink as much as you can, and make sure you're wee and clear all the time, otherwise you might be dehydrated. And actually, I think that caused a lot of athletes in that era some problems, you know, Mark included. He's got to learn the hard way there.
Yeah, definitely. Not just problems, but even deaths in some situations. So just whilst we're on that then, just briefly explain exactly what is hyponatremia, what causes it, and how can you be aware that that might be, you know, an issue for you?
Well, hyponatremia, hypo meaning low, and then Na, natremia, is sodium in the blood. So your body contains quite a lot of sodium at any one point in time, and a fair amount of it is circulating in the bloodstream. And it's one of those things that's controlled very tightly by homeostasis. So your blood sodium levels, for you to feel okay and be healthy, need to be between about 135 and 145 millimoles at any time. And your body regulates that and keeps it very close. It's a bit like the regulation of your core temperature. It doesn't fluctuate much. And if it does, you get into a lot of trouble. What happens with, if you get that, or ways that you can get hypernatremia, the first one is you can just drink too much plain water or very low sodium fluid. So there've been cases where there was a horrendous TV or radio inspired competition when the Nintendo Wii came out, and it was, you could win a Wii by holding your Wii or something stupid like that. And they got these people to drink as much water as they could without weeing.
Oh my God.
And to win it, and one of them died.
So, oh my God.
Yeah. This is going back a few years now, but it basically, what happens is you die because if you drink too much water, and you don't pee it out, your blood starts to dilute down. Now, because your body tries very hard to control the level of salt in the blood, what it does is it shunts fluid from the bloodstream into your body's cells, so into the intracellular space from the extracellular space, in order to preserve that salt level in the blood. And of course, if you get extra fluid shunting into your body's cells, if it goes into your peripheries, your fingers might swell up a little bit, your ankles might swell up a little bit, you might just generally look and feel a bit puffy and feel a bit heavy. But if it goes into your brain cells expand and become spongy, and they push against the skull, and it can actually cause brain damage, either temporary or permanent brain damage. And that's what ultimately kills people if it goes too far. And there's been a few, apart from that Nintendo Wii one, there's been a few other cases, and a lot of them have happened in triathlon and marathon running, where principally what people have done is drunk too much because they've been afraid of dehydration. The interesting thing from our perspective, and from my perspective, especially with the level of salt loss that I have in my sweat, being like a heavy salt loser when I sweat, is that can contribute to hypernatremia risk as well. Because if you're sweating out more salt, you deplete the body more quickly, and obviously relatively, then you can dilute yourself more easily. So it's an area that we've got a very strong interest in as a business, and we've been conducting some research and actually published a couple of papers in this area in the last 2 years with some doctors in the US, because we're trying to raise people's awareness of it and understanding of it. It's a very good reason why, for long distance endurance stuff, individualizing hydration is quite important.
Yeah, totally. I remember doing my very first Ironman, which I didn't complete. So I'll start with that part of the story first. I didn't actually complete my first Ironman. I've never gone back to doing an Ironman either. I remember doing, it was 2004, had a pretty good swim out of the water, came out on the bike.
Was that Western Australia where you did that one?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. So it was in Western Australia, and the fear was that it was going to be a very, very hot day, and obviously wanted to make sure that I was suitably hydrated and also suitably fueled as well. And I remember training up for that particular event, and I think my goal was to do the classic thing of eating 1 gram of carb per kilogram of body weight per hour. But yeah. Once I got onto the bike, I panicked a little bit and thought, oh, I better just eat a little bit more. So I started eating a little bit more. And I think at the peak before getting off the bike, completely delirious, I was eating around about 120 grams of carb an hour, which is just ridiculous. I was probably weighing about 70 kilograms at that point. So I should have been on about 70. And I just remember having this issue whereby all the carb which had been taken in was actually just stuck in my stomach. It wasn't actually getting into it. The energy wasn't getting into my body, and just basically just drawing it all into the stomach, became super distended, and the doctors ended up pulling me off the course. And it wasn't until I learned a little bit more about, you know, the nutrition side of things and making sure that I shouldn't be eating that much, but then secondly how to actually overcome some of that, and even, you know, making sure that I was actually taking on enough salts to actually help me digest properly. And I've since knocked back the amount of carbohydrate taken on board on these type events to probably around about 40 to 55 grams per hour, and just being much, much more mindful of the amount of electrolytes that I'm losing. And, you know, that's where we came a little bit unstuck actually at the weekend in Bali, because my partner Brad, who's a super, super strong swimmer, we decided for me to actually, my swim's been going quite good recently, and we decided for me to lead the first swim 500 meters into the beach. And we're racing alongside Annika Eriksson, four-time swimmer and world champion, and her partner Peter Aronson. And the plan was to actually just stay with them on the first swim. We came out halfway into the swim. Brad got stuck on a fishing line. All I knew was my tether was just getting stretched to the max. And I had to literally stop, let the Swedish guys go, stood up, and because it was actually fairly shallow water, stood up and looked around at Brad, and he's just stuck there, pierced on this fishing line. He let go of the cable, and of course, you can imagine what that's like, letting go of an elastic cable. It came smashing back along the water, hit me in the chest. And I thought, oh my God, you know, he eventually got himself clear. We carried on swimming. We'd lost about 25, 30 seconds in that process and got out of the water a little bit down. And stupidly, we ran through the first transition, which is where we'd put some precision hydration in our flexible bottles, and we just missed it completely. And we had a 9K run in 31 degrees Celsius, 90% humidity to do before getting into the next swim, which is about 33, 34 degrees. So you can only imagine the amount of fluid and sodium loss that I had leading into that. And, you know, the day started to, it didn't go completely downhill by any stretch of the imagination, but I started to overheat massively. And, you know, just paying attention to those hydration levels is so important. But there we go. So obviously before setting up precision hydration, there was as I recall, there's an extra step in there, isn't there? You set up VO2 coaching and some events, etc. What did you learn through working with athletes of an age group, particularly an age group level there, with which sort of maybe sort of seeded your ideas about maybe pushing things forwards with precision hydration?
Yeah, it was a bit of a natural transition really, because I did the Formula One stuff for a while and then ended up doing some coaching of other motorsport drivers on the side as an independent thing. I'd run a training camp. Elliot Chalifour, who you know well, who's very very high level Ironman and ex Terra athlete.
A bit of a beast, really. Is probably the best way of describing it.
Yeah, I've done a few. Well, I did Otolo originally with Elliot a few years ago, and he isn't a unit. But he was running a training camp for some triathletes out in Sardinia and asked me to go out and help him with that. And while we were there, we had a chat about potentially, you know, setting up a bit of a coaching business, which then led into events. And we did that. And that still runs now, you know, that business is still going on. We still operate the sports science lab at Silverstone at the racetrack. And there's still VO2 events companies still putting on triathlons and ultra running races and stuff. But, you know, working with lots and lots of different athletes, that was where I went back to my own experiences with hydration and the sweat testing. And basically what I did was started to implement sweat testing as one of the physiological parameters that we'd measure in lab tests when we were getting to know our athletes. And it was working with a big variety of elite and age group athletes that I started to realize how much of a range there was in terms of sweat loss, and also how much of a range there was in terms of people's understanding and experience of what to do with hydration. And that's when I started to think, well, maybe there's a whole thread in here where rather than, you know, doing general coaching, I can get into something way more niche and more specific and really have a much deeper look into one subject area. And gradually it sort of evolved. I did a bit of sweat testing and hydration stuff alongside the coaching and the lab testing. And then eventually it morphed into a full-time job.
So Andy, exactly how do you sweat test somebody? How was it back then, 15, 20 years ago, versus what you're doing these days with precision hydration?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. The technology that we use is actually fairly old now. It was originally developed for testing a disease called cystic fibrosis, because one of the characteristics of CF is that people lose a very high amount of salt in their sweat. Their sweat glands don't function properly. And so this technology, it basically has been used for a long, long time in that field. And we were just one of the first people to transfer it across and adapt it a little bit to use with athletes. And one of the key things with it is that you don't have to actually exercise and sweat to do a sweat test. So if you're working with one athlete, getting them to exercise and sweat and collecting it and getting it to a lab for analysis is not too bad a process. But we go into places where we're testing, you know, 50, 80, 100 athletes at a time, and it's just almost impossible to do it through exercise means. So we use a little device that stimulates the sweat glands in your arm. You then put a collection device on. It takes about 5 or 10 minutes to get a sweat sample. And then we've got a desktop analyzer that you can run the sweat through, and all in all, within about 20 minutes, you can get a result on what an athlete's sweat profile looks like. And what we're mainly focused on is the level of sodium they lose in their sweat, because like with people that have CF, anyone and everyone, whether you have CF or not, your sweat glands' ability to reabsorb salt from your sweat before it leaves the skin is variable. Mine happens to be particularly poor. You know, I really don't reabsorb much salt at all. So I lose a lot of salt in my sweat. And I sort of can see that now in retrospect, because whenever I do sweat, I end up with, you know, crusts of salt on my kit or on my arms and in my eyebrows or on my hat. And so it's sort of retrospectively obvious, but a lot of people, of course, get their sweat test and they just have no idea whether it's going to be, you know, high or medium or low. And because it's, although some other factors influence it, because it's largely genetic, it's the kind of test you only really need to do once. It just helps you figure out, you know, where you're at in terms of your individual rate of loss. And then that gives us an idea on sort of how to tailor a hydration plan based on different events that you'll be doing.
If only we knew now what we were doing back then, etc. Imagine how much further we could have gone with things, eh?
That's the biggest thing for me, Paul, is definitely the ability to do sweat testing and stuff is not necessarily impactful or really, really impactful for every single athlete that we test, especially those that we test who have very, very low salt loss, because it isn't something that's likely to affect their performance. But for those of us that either sweat a lot or do very long hot events, or like me, if you have all three, if you have a high sweat rate, you have a high salt loss, and you do really long hot events, then it can be an absolute game changer. And I'm largely convinced that I'd have had a very different outcome racing in some of the longer, hotter Ironman races I did if I'd have had this knowledge previously, which was a big part of the motivation then for getting it out there to make it accessible for other athletes. You know, hopefully we can help people shortcut some of the bad side of the trial and error that they need to do to get zoned in on what their ideal hydration strategy is for them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've obviously done one of these tests. One of my colleagues, Sean, came over to Perth in West Australia a couple of years ago, and I sat down there, did the test itself. And it was what I remember about the test itself was it just being very non-invasive. So obviously, for those of you who maybe don't know what I mean by that term, we tend to talk about that a lot in sports and exercise science, whether it's invasive or non-invasive. It's just, like Andy says, you don't have to actually get wet and sweaty. You can just literally sit down. It will stimulate the sweat glands, and it'll actually measure the amount of sodium loss and electrolyte loss in the body there. And I think the thing for me that I was really quite surprised about was, yes, it did show that I had a huge rate or very high rate of sweat, which I sort of knew about because of all the puddles that I often see under myself. People, you know, I can literally just be sat in an air-conditioned room and I'll be pouring with sweat. But I was actually quite surprised that the amount of sodium loss for myself, it wasn't as high as I was expecting. I just assumed the two would go hand in hand. And because of that, you know, like you say, you can then cater the amount of the type of hydration program that you need to be on and following from that. Adam, do you know your sweat loss, Adam? Do you reckon you're a big sweater? I don't know if you've actually done one of Andy's tests yet, but where would you peg yourself, Adam?
Well, it's interesting. I was just thinking about that myself just for the last 10 minutes. I don't sweat that much, I don't think. Certainly, and I don't know if sweat rates change as you age, but I seem to sweat a little bit less now than I remember when I was, say, 20. Maybe I'm not trying as hard, I don't know. However, I've no idea about the sodium content of my sweat and if I'm losing it or not. So I need to get one of these tests done. In fact, it's a bit of a funny story, isn't it? Because at the triathlon show earlier this year, I was going to come over to your stand and do the test, and I ended up nearly collapsing because I had a really nasty virus and I had to go back to the hotel to rest. So I never got to do that test. So
I've never ever seen you so sick.
I was really unwell, really. I was actually talking to a guy, and if you can imagine, at a packed exhibition sort of event, thousands of people crammed in, and I was talking to this guy about his swimming, and I actually thought I was going to pass out, and I had to say to him, look, I know this seems really strange, I'm actually going to have to sit down. And in the middle of, you know, it's just a floor where people were standing around, and I had to sit down in the middle of the show. I don't know what he thought, but that was really bad. So sometime or other, I'm going to have to pop down to one of your centres, Andy. So how does that work with the business? Do you have centres around the country or around the world people can drop into and get the test done? Or
yeah, there's a few different places. We've certainly got a number of centres in the UK. We've got quite a few, a growing amount of them in the US now. We've got a machine on its way out to Australia at the moment as well. So you'll be able to do a test out there soon. I think we've got one in South Africa. We've got one in Singapore. So one in Thailand. So we're gradually, you know, getting more access for people to get testing. There's also a sort of interim step that people can take, which you can do from anywhere, which is we've got an online version of the sweat test on our website, and you just go to the homepage, which is precisionhydration.com, and hit hydration, give them free hydration strategy, and answer a few questions. And what we've got is we've got an algorithm which sits behind the questionnaire of about 8 questions, and it points you in the right direction of whether it sounds like you might be someone who benefit from, you know, taking electrolytes or even, you know, large amounts of electrolytes or none at all when you're doing the sport that you're doing. And that algorithm's been developed over a few years now, and although it's definitely not as good as doing a full test, it's a very good starting point. And so that's what we recommend to most people, is to start with that and see what kind of recommendations they get, because obviously that's completely free and you can do it from wherever you are.
Sound familiar, Adam?
It does. It certainly does. You're talking about swimtypes.com to find out a little bit more and diagnose your own swimming problems. Yeah, so there definitely is this individuality, this common idea here.
That's apart from the fact that, you know, obviously Paul and I go back a long way, it's one of the reasons I think why for us it feels like having a partnership with Swim Smooth and Precision Hydration makes a lot of sense, because getting people to really think about understanding, you know, performance from their own perspective is what we're both all about. I certainly didn't benefit from, you know, following and copying other people's hydration strategies when I was trying to race, especially in the heat, because it just didn't work for me. I was an outlier. And I'm sure you guys must have seen it with, you know, people who come to you to learn to swim or to learn to improve their swimming. And you can't just teach everyone the same way. Despite, you know, and copying what the best in the world do, which is where a lot of people start, is definitely not going to work for everyone.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I think, like you say, Andy, being able to jump on your website there and actually do the questionnaire and find out a little bit about what you're likely to require is obviously a first stepping stone to that. Adam, you actually wrote the algorithm for swim types in a similar sort of manner. It just sort of sits behind there. The seemingly innocent questionnaire is highly intelligent, and as best we can, create the intelligence there to help people identify where they should be starting with the swimming journey. So yeah, lots and lots of parallels there between what we're both doing, which is quite cool, really, given our background and friendship and both doing sports and exercise science and where we all started, really, which is really nice to see. So Andy, you do a lot of travel now then, bringing precision hydration to different places around the world. Tell us some of the sports that you're actually involved with. You mentioned baseball briefly there at the start, but yeah. Where else are you involved with around the world with the product and the company?
Yeah, the biggest sports that we're involved with, I would say, in terms of number of participants are obviously triathlon, cycling, swimming, and running, particularly ultra distance running. But some of the most interesting experiences I've had have been working in the US with all the major sports there. So we work with teams in quite a few teams now in the NFL, the National Football League, with the basketball players in the NBA. Some of those guys are incredible athletes. We're talking about, I've sweat tested guys that are like 7'4" tall with size 16 feet. And
I've seen some of those photos, Andy. They're, you're not. I wouldn't say you were short, but they make you look very tiny. I've got to say,
yeah,
they're huge.
Just under 5'10", and you stand next to these guys, and literally, my head is like in line with their nipples for some of them. It's hilarious when you go and test them. And some of them, I mean, one guy we tested had a sweat rate of 3.5 liters per hour. Which is, if you can wrap your head around that, that's an unbelievable amount of fluid loss. And basketball, such an intense game. It's played indoors, obviously. It's quite warm in those halls. They play very intensely for 40, 50 minutes. And then they'll play multiple games back to back and do training in between. So we've seen some real impact with quite a few individuals actually getting their hydration plans individualized for both when they're playing and also for recovery between sessions and between matches. We've also done a fair bit now with ice hockey players in the NHL, with some of the major league soccer teams over there. So that all of that side of things and continuing to do work in motorsports. So NASCAR drivers, Formula One drivers, MotoGP riders, World Rally drivers, basically anyone who sweats a lot. We've even recently been doing some work in Australia with people who are working in very hot conditions, because obviously you get some extreme temperatures out there. And we've been working with a group of rail workers who have to go out on the tracks during the heat of the day and actually do repairs. So they're often welding. So they've got full welding kit on. Wow. They're working in sort of 35 to 40 degrees Celsius. And they're working 5, 6, 7 hour shifts and probably sweating as much as someone does an Ironman. So we've been helping.
That's crazy.
We've been helping those guys in terms of recovering between sessions. We also had a fantastic email recently from a guy in Las Vegas, funny enough, where in the summer it's not uncommon for it to be 110 Fahrenheit, whatever that is in Celsius, must be in the 40s, and that he works for UPS and he's a UPS driver, and they don't have doors on the side of their trucks because they're always jumping in and out all the time and running parcels to people's doors. And he was saying that obviously they don't have aircon, and that some of the guys he works with, himself included, would have to take themselves to a hospital in the evening between work shifts to have an intravenous drip put in so they could rehydrate enough to go to work the next day. So we did some sweat testing he's had a sweat test with his previous team, started using the products, and has found that he can actually look after himself properly with the right understanding of how much electrolyte he needs to put back in during the day. Because a lot of them will just drink soft drinks or energy drinks or cups of coffee and water. And in those extreme conditions, it's just not enough. So we're getting really excited about, opportunities outside of sport to sort of help improve people's performance at work as well.
So Andy, assuming somebody has done a sweat test or maybe gone on the questionnaire, what's the step forward? How do you actually write a hydration program for somebody? What is different about the products you offer and how does that work?
What we try to do is, I think, like a nutrition plan for a race or an event or for training, we don't try to be excessively prescriptive in terms of writing down to the nth degree how much people should drink and all that sort of thing, because a skill that all athletes need to develop when it comes to hydration and nutrition is listening to their body, you know, on the fly and figuring out what they need. But that doesn't mean you just leave it all to chance and don't work anything out. So we tried to set in our hydration strategies basic parameters for people which say, look, you know, before you exercise, we think you should drink about this much of a solution containing, you know, X, Y, or Z. During an event or during a session, we think you should be consuming between about this much and this much with a certain concentration of electrolytes in there, and then potentially something for them afterwards as well. So what we try and do is we try and set the ballpark for them to go out and have a bit of flexibility to get some trial and error done themselves, understanding the parameters they can tweak and then figure it out. Because I think often athletes, and I don't know if you find this with your coaching, but sometimes people want to come to you to give them, you know, the answer. But dealing with a complex situation like hydration and nutrition for racing and training is, there's not always one answer. There are some things which are definitely wrong, and there's a few things that might well work, but you have to try them out. So we try and, you know, narrow all of that down, get people to understand what sort of area they want to be working in, and then help them tweak it and develop it from there. We've actually got someone full time on our team, a great guy, James Phillips, who's a triathlete and a sports scientist, who works on the email and on the phones with athletes all day long, answering their questions about how their, you know, hydration strategies are going, what they could be trying and tweaking, answering the questions about if you use this product and combine it with another product, how does that work? So that's a big part of how we sort of help people figure it out for themselves.
So with respect to the actual product itself then, is it just one strength, or does it come in a variety of different strengths in terms of how much somebody's sweating? How does that actually work?
Yeah, for us, the key variable in a rehydration drink is how much sodium is in it, because people's rate of loss differs. People tend to benefit from having different ratios of sodium in their drinks for different conditions. And that's something which a lot of the sort of sports nutrition industry doesn't do. What most companies do is they make a drink and they make it in one composition and one strength, and then, you know, do it in half a dozen different flavors. What we do with our products is we don't make loads of different flavors. We make one flavor, which is a very, very mild sort of citrus-based flavor, but we make four different strengths. So the weakest one we do has 250 milligrams of sodium per liter. The strongest one we do has 1500 milligrams per liter. And, you know, most people tend to end up using one of the strong ones, the 1000 or the 1500, when they're doing longer or hotter events. And people will often end up on the weaker ones when they're doing other stuff. But that's what our sort of hydration strategies are based around, is kind of, if you like, fitting the right drink to you, or the one that's most likely to work, and then letting you go and try it to figure it out for yourself.
Andy, I have a question relating to, obviously we've been talking about training and recovery, etc. What about hydration levels? Let's say if you're someone perhaps like myself who might drink a bit more caffeine than they should during the day, and perhaps doesn't have a very good sort of routine, and then they're obviously maybe training once or twice a day. And is there a risk of going into those training sessions a bit dehydrated? Because as I understand it, caffeine has a dehydration effect. Should we be taking that a little bit more seriously as athletes? I know a lot of people drink a lot of coffee and that sort of thing.
It's a good question. If you go to the science on that one, first of all, the science points to the fact that caffeine doesn't actually cause doesn't cause net dehydration. So although you might pee a bit more because the caffeine is a diuretic, the extra fluid that you take on board drinking your coffee and those sort of things basically does offset it, so you don't end up in a net dehydrated state. That's what the scientific literature will tell you. My own experience, though, I would say for sure, if I find that I have had some days, especially, and I find this when I'm traveling and stuff, and you end up drinking a lot of coffees in airports and you know, try and stay awake, is that definitely feels like, certainly from a subjective level at least, like my hydration gets compromised. And as someone who used to get a lot of cramps and things like that, I definitely notice I've got more of a propensity to get cramps when I've had too much tea and coffee and not enough water or electrolyte drinks. So what I tend to do is recommend that if you're training later in the day, certainly in the afternoon, switch out one of your hot drinks or caffeinated drinks and have a strong electrolyte drink. Because if you can get that in a few hours before you start, you stand much more chance of topping up effectively. I often nowadays try and stop drinking caffeinated drinks after about 11 or 12 in the morning. You know, to try and give my body a chance with that. And everyone's different. You know, everyone's sort of own way they metabolize caffeine is different. But from personal experience, I'd say, you know, stop drinking it in the morning if you can, and try and have, you know, try and follow that kind of start hydrated protocol that I was talking about. You know, drinking light an hour or so before you, at least an hour or so before you go, and you might find that there's a big difference for that. I definitely found that was the case when I've been traveling along on the west coast of the US, where it's obviously quite warm and hot, and your body clocks out of whack. So I was waking up very early in the morning. I was actually drinking a strong electrolyte drink while I was up at 4 or 5 in the morning doing some emails and catching up on some work before I'd go out for a run at about 7 a.m. and feeling a lot better for it than I otherwise would.
Wow, that's really, really, really interesting.
Just before we sort of wrap up, Andy, do you have any tips for triathletes, open water swimmers, on some simple hydration strategies? Most people might sort of assume for swimming that you don't really sweat too much, but I know for myself, I definitely do that, even in colder water. Obviously, I wouldn't necessarily sweat as much, but do you have any tips for us, our listeners here, for triathletes, open water swimmers, to help them with their hydration?
Definitely. The big one, I think, especially if we start with swimmers, is the fact that, you know, you definitely don't have as much opportunity to drink as you do doing land-based sports. So more than ever, it's important to start really well hydrated. Especially if you're doing a long distance swimming, especially if it is in warm water, because as you know, you do sweat when you're swimming, and in warm water, you can sweat a hell of a lot. So turning up well hydrated, most people, idea of turning up well hydrated to a training session or a race is to neck loads of water in the hours before. And unfortunately, because of the way the body works, that's often very ineffective. You might end up peeing a lot of clear liquid out and thinking that you're well hydrated, but that's just your body trying to dump that water before you start and not dilute your blood down. So we have a very simple protocol that we recommend to people to pre-hydrate, and that is to use the strongest product we make, pH 1500, and have about one serving, which is about 500 mil or 16 ounces of that, around about an hour before you start. And then what that does, the extra salts that are in there move from your stomach and gut into your bloodstream, and then they pull the fluid that you've drunk with them and hold it in your bloodstream. So you actually manage to absorb it and hold onto it and boost your blood volume, and you don't end up just weeing it out. We've actually written a pretty detailed blog on that, which is really popular on our website, called How to Start Hydrated. And I can give you the link for that one to put in the show notes if you like. But I would say for the triathletes and swimmers, that's the number one tip, is don't go crazy with the pre-hydration thinking you've got to drink loads and loads. You know, just drink one kind of 500 ml serving of the correct stuff before you get going, and you will feel a world of difference 9 times out of 10.
Brilliant. Well, that's great. Some great strategies and tips from you there, Andy. Have you got any races coming up in the near future for yourself? Anything else you're thinking of doing?
Well, since I know that you've had another swim run race since we did Sweden, I'm quite keen to do another swim run race next year. So I might go back to the Scilly Isles again, the one that you and I both did independently year or so before. I've entered a 13-mile cross-country running race in February to try and get myself motivated to get out and do some running over the winter. So
brilliant. Whereabouts is that?
Things. That's back in Leicestershire, where I grew up as a youngster. So it's a race I did when I was about I think I last did it when I was about 19 or 20, and I've got a bit of a strange goal just to see if I can get anywhere near as quick as I was 20 years ago doing it. So,
I don't think it's that strange. That sounds pretty cool, actually. Yeah.
Talking about it here, it's only a few weeks to go. I've got to pull my finger out and start getting some miles in.
Yeah, well, with any luck, I think given how your running has been going in the last 12 months, I think you'll have no problem achieving that goal.
What are you going to do next?
Next one for me, like I say, Dan Plews is chewing my ear off at the moment for doing a swim run over there in New Zealand, probably one of the Brekker series. So I've got to look at doing that. I am very nervous about the fact that he's, you know, current Ironman world champion as an age grouper, 8:24 in Kona. So you can imagine how much I'm going to have to pull my finger out to get ready for the run component of that. Especially the swimming probably be okay, but the running definitely I need to step things up a notch or two there. And other than that, I'm doing the Rottnest Channel Swim in February as part of a duo. So it won't be like we did it in the Attila race where we're actually doing everything together. This is literally like a relay. So one of us will be on the boat. The other one will be swimming for 10 minutes or so, and then we simply swap over. And I'm doing it with a guy called Paul Blackbeard, who is he's actually 60 years of age, but believe it or not, Andy still swims 4:30 for a 400 freestyle long course. So he's one of the fastest 6-year-olds on the planet. Yeah, he holds the world record for the duo. In terms of they do it in like age categories, so your combined age is what they go for. So as I've just turned 40 like yourself, he's 60, we're in the 100 plus category. He actually holds the record as it stands, and he wants us to try and beat it together. So I've got to get my swimming into gear and into shape as well, so it's definitely something to keep me motivated over the winter months, that's for sure. Well, I say your winter months, I should say my summer months, of course.
What are you doing, Adam? You training for stuff?
Mostly cycling right now. It's pretty good area where I live for cycling. So do that a few time trials. Might do the odd sprint try locally. I got a few mates do that sort of thing, and just keep my aura in a little bit of triathlon. Looking forward to that. Building up after Christmas.
After the festivities.
Yeah,
brilliant. So Andy, that's great. Some really interesting tips and nuggets for everybody there listening in. If somebody's interested in what we've been talking about today and want to know a little bit more about hydration and specifically what you offer there with Precision Hydration, how can they get a little bit involved, especially through what we offer here with Swim Smooth as well?
Yeah, the probably the best place to start is precisionhydration.com. Hit the website. We've got a hydration advice blog. It's going to be undergoing a redesign soon as well to make it nicely searchable. But there's lots of good articles on there. You can also email us on hello@precisionhydration.com or message us on Twitter or Facebook. And we aim to get back to all of those queries and questions in about 24 to 48 hours. So, you know, definitely you'll get an answer from a human being if you drop us a line and want to get in touch. In terms of the sort of specifics, obviously with Swim Smooth and pH, we're partnering up with you guys, which is something that we're really, really pleased about. This whole sort of idea of individualization, which cuts across both businesses, makes a lot of sense. So if anyone from your Swim Smooth audience who's listening wants to try any of our products, they can go online and do the online sweat test that we have. You get offered a discounted product bundle from that to try, but also if you use the code SWIMSMOOTH, which is all capitals, you get an additional 15% off the first order. So people can, you know, log on and try that. We're also sending out and arranging for a voucher for your Swim Smooth Guru members. So I think they can look out for that in their inboxes and they'll get a voucher to actually get some free pH products too.
Absolutely. We're going to be announcing that very soon to all Guru members. So yeah, if you're a Guru subscriber, watch out for that very soon.
Yeah, I think the other thing is as well, we've obviously put together a little sort of blog article and press release about the partnership between pH and Swim Smooth. So that'll be in the show notes, I guess, and people can link to that and read more and look out for more stuff, because I hope we can, obviously we can do more work together and maybe some more races together as time goes on.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
I'll make sure I'm get my fitness level up there for that, Andy. But yeah, no, absolutely. No, it's been great having you on the show, mate. Great to chew the fat with you, and hope everybody out there has really benefited from that. So thanks to you, Andy, and we wish you a good day over there in sunny UK.
Thanks very much, guys. Yeah, nice to talk to you, and hope it's not too long before I see you again.
Well, that was great to catch up there with Andy Blow from Precision Hydration. If you want to learn more about Precision Hydration, go to www.precisionhydration.com, or you can follow them on Instagram and Twitter at The Sweat Experts. And we look forward to getting back to you with a new show very shortly. Bye-bye for now.